Chapter 87. Imogen printed on his ear, and who is not altogether happy in those courts which vibrate to the tenderest emotions. You, Tony, possess in yourself all that is calculated to charm the eye and allure the taste. It is not happily for you, perhaps, and I may wish that I could say the same. It is not your character to hover around one flower. The Allée garden is open to you, and your airy pinions carry you through it. Still, Tony, far be it from me, I am sure, to wound even your feelings without a cause. Tony again entreats that the subject may be no longer pursued, saying emphatically, William Guppy, drop it. Mr. Guppy acquiesces, with the reply, I never should have taken it up, Tony, of my own accord. And now, says Tony, stirring the fire, touching this same bundle of letters, isn't it an extraordinary thing of Crook to have appointed 12 o'clock tonight to hand them over to me? Very. What did he do it for? What does he do anything for? He don't know. Said today was his birthday and he'd hand them over tonight at 12 o'clock. He'll have drunk himself blind by that time. He has been at it all day. He hasn't forgotten the appointment, I hope. Forgotten? Trust him for that. He never forgets anything. I saw him tonight, about 8 helped him to shut up his shop, and he had got the letters then in his hairy cap. He pulled it off, and showed them me. When the shop was closed, he took them out of his cap, hung his cap on the chair back, and stood turning them over before the fire. I heard him a little while afterwards, through the floor here, humming like the wind, the only song he knows about Bibo, and old Charon, and Bibo being drunk when he died, or something or other. He has been as quiet, since as an old rat asleep in his hole. And you are to go down at 12? At 12. And as I tell you, when you came it seemed to me 100. Tony, says Mr. Guppy, after considering a little with his legs crossed, he can't read yet, can he? Read. He'll never read. He can make all the letters separately, and he knows most of them separately when he sees them. He has got on that much, under me, but he can't put them together. He's too old to acquire the knack of it now and too drunk. Tony, says Mr. Guppy, uncrossing and recrossing his legs, how do you suppose he spelt out that name of Hawden? He never spelt it out. You know what a curious power of eye he has, and how he has been used to employ himself in copying things by eye alone. He imitated it, evidently from the direction of a letter, and asked me what it meant. Tony, says Mr. Guppy, uncrossing and recrossing his legs again, should you say that the original was a man's writing or a woman's? A woman's. 50-1 a lady slopes a good deal, and the end of the letter N, apostrophe long and hasty. Mr. Guppy has been biting his thumbnail during this dialogue, generally changing the thumb when he has changed the cross leg. As he is going to do so again, he happens to look at his coat sleeve. It takes his attention. He stares at it, aghast. Why, Tony, what on earth is going on in this house tonight? Is there a chimney on fire? Chimney on fire. Ah, returns Mr. Guppy. See how the soot's falling. See here, on my arm. See again, on the table here. Confound the stuff, it won't blow off smears like black fat. They look at one another, and Tony goes listening to the door, and a little way upstairs, and a little way downstairs. Comes back and says it's all right and all quiet, and quotes the remark he lately made to Mr. Snagsby about their cooking chops at the Soul's Arms. And it was then, resumes Mr. Guppy, still glancing with remarkable aversion at the coat sleeve, as they pursue their conversation before the fire, leaning on opposite sides of the table, with their heads very near together, that he told you of his having taken the bundle of letters from his lodger's portmanteau? That was the time, sir, answers Tony, faintly adjusting his whiskers. Whereupon I wrote a line to my dear boy, the Honorable William Guppy, informing him of the appointment for tonight and advising him not to call before, Bogway being a sly boots. The light vivacious tone of fashionable life which is usually assumed by Mr. Weevil sits so ill upon him tonight, that he abandons that and his whiskers together, and after looking over his shoulder, appears to yield himself up a prey to the horrors again. You are to bring the letters to your room to read and compare, and to get yourself into a position to tell him all about them. That's the arrangement, isn't it, Tony? Asks Mr. Guppy, anxiously biting his thumbnail. You can't speak too low. Yes. That's what he and I agreed. I tell you what, Tony, you can't speak too low, says Tony once more. Mr. Guppy nods his sagacious head, advances it yet closer, and drops into a whisper. I tell you what. The first thing to be done is to make another packet like the real one, so that if he should ask to see the real one while it's in my possession, you can show him the dummy. And suppose he detects the dummy as soon as he sees it, which with his biting screw of an eye is about 500 times more likely than not, suggests Tony. Then we'll face it out. They don't belong to him, and they never did. You found that, and you placed them in my hands, a legal friend of yours, for security. If he forces us to it, they'll be producible, won't they? Yes, is Mr. Weevil's reluctant admission. Why, Tony, remonstrates his friend, how you look. You don't doubt William Guppy? You don't suspect any harm? I don't suspect anything more than I know, William, returns the other gravely. And what do you know? Urges Mr. Guppy, raising his voice a little, but on his friends once more warning him, I tell you, you can't speak too low, he repeats his question without any sound at all, forming with his lips only the words, what do you know? I know three things. First, I know that here we are whispering in secrecy, a pair of conspirators. Well, says Mr. Guppy. And we had better be that than a pair of noodles, which we should be if we were doing anything else, for it's the only way of doing what we want to do. Secondly, it's not made out to me how it's likely to be profitable after all. Mr. Guppy casts up his eyes at the portrait of Lady Dedlock over the mantelshelf and replies, Tony, you are asked to leave that to the honor of your friend. Besides, it's being calculated to serve that friend in those courts of the human mind which need not be called into agonizing vibration on the present occasion. Your friend is no fool. What's that? It's 11 o'clock striking by the bell of St. Paul's. Listen and you'll hear all the bells in the city jangling. Both sit silent, listening to the metal voices, near and distant, resounding from towers of various heights, in tones more various than their situations. When these at length cease, all seems more mysterious and quiet than before. One disagreeable result of whispering is that it seems to evoke an atmosphere of silence, haunted by the ghosts of sound, strange cracks and tickings, the rustling of garments that have no substance in them, and the tread of dreadful feet that would leave no mark on the sea sand or the winter snow. So sensitive the two friends happen to be that the air is full of these phantoms, and the two look over their shoulders by one consent to see that the door is shut. Yes, Tony? Says Mr. Guppy, drawing nearer to the fire and biting his unsteady thumbnail. You were going to say, thirdly? It's far from a pleasant thing to be plotting about a dead man in the room where he died, especially when you happen to live in it. But we are plotting nothing against him, Tony. Maybe not, still I don't like it. Live here by yourself, and see how you like it. As to dead men, Tony, proceeds Mr. Guppy, evading this proposal, there have been dead men in most rooms. I know there have, but in most rooms you let them alone, and they let you alone, Tony answers. The two look at each other again. Mr. Guppy makes a hurried remark to the effect that they may be doing the deceased a service, that he hopes so. There is an oppressive blank until Mr. Weevil, by stirring the fire suddenly, makes Mr. Guppy start, as if his heart had been stirred instead. Fah! Here's more of this hateful soot hanging about, says he. Let us open the window a bit, and get a mouthful of air. It's too close. He raises the sash, and they both rest on the windowsill, half in and half out of the room. The neighboring houses are too near to admit of their seeing any sky without craning their necks and looking up, but lights in frosty windows here and there, and the rolling of distant carriages, and the new expression that there is of the stir of men, they find to be comfortable. Mr. Guppy, noiselessly tapping on the windowsill, resumes his whisperer in quite a light comedy tone. By the by, Tony, don't forget old Smallweed, meaning the younger of that name. I have not let him into this, you know. That grandfather of his is too keen by half. It runs in the family. I remember, says Tony. I am up to all that. And as to Crook, resumes Mr. Guppy. Now, do you suppose he really has got hold of any other papers of importance, as he has boasted to you, since you have been such allies? Tony shakes his head. I don't know. Can't imagine. If we get through this business without rousing his suspicions, I shall be better informed, no doubt. How can I know without seeing them, when he don't know himself? He is always spelling out words from them, and chalking them over the table and the shop wall, and asking what this is, and what that is. But his whole stock from beginning to end, may easily be the waste paper he bought it as, for anything I can say. It's a monomania with him to think he is possessed of documents. He has been going to learn to read them this last quarter of a century, I should judge, from what he tells me. How did he first come by that idea, though? That's the question, Mr. Guppy suggests with one eye shut, after a little forensic meditation. He may have found papers in something he bought, where papers were not supposed to be, and may have got it into his shrewd head from the manner and place of their concealment, that they are worth something. Or he may have been taken in some pretended bargain. Or he may have been muddled altogether by long staring at whatever he has got, and by drink, and by hanging about the Lord Chancellor's court and hearing of documents forever, returns Mr. Weevle. Mr. Guppy sitting on the windowsill, nodding his head and balancing all these possibilities in his mind, continues thoughtfully to tap it, and clasp it, and measure it with his hand, until he hastily draws his hand away. What, in the devil's name, he says, is this? Look at my fingers. A thick, yellow liquor defiles them, which is offensive to the touch and sight and more offensive to the smell. A stagnant, sickening oil with some natural repulsion in it that makes them both shudder. What have you been doing here? What have you been pouring out of window? I pouring out of window? Nothing, I swear. Never, since I have been here, cries the lodger. And yet look here and look here. When he brings the candle here, from the corner of the windowsill, it slowly drips and creeps away down the bricks, here lies in a little thick nauseous pool. This is a horrible house, says Mr. Guppy, shutting down the window. Give me some water, or I shall cut my hand off. He so washes, and rubs, and scrubs, and smells, and washes, that he has not long restored himself with a glass of brandy, and stood silently before the fire, when St. Paul's bell strikes 12, and all those other bells strike 12 from their towers of various heights in the dark air, and in their many tones. When all is quiet again, the lodger says, it's the appointed time at last. Shall I go? Mr. Guppy nods, and gives him a lucky touch on the back, but not with the washed hand, though it is his right hand. He goes downstairs, and Mr. Guppy tries to compose himself before the fire for waiting a long time. But in no more than a minute or two the stairs creak and Tony comes swiftly back. Have you got them? Got them? No. The old man's not there. He has been so horribly frightened in the short interval, that his terror seizes the other, who makes a rush at him and asks loudly, what's the matter? I couldn't make him hear, and I softly opened the door and looked in. And the burning smell is there and the soot is there, and the oil is there, and he is not there. Tony ends this with a groan. Mr. Guppy takes the light. They go down, more dead than alive, and holding one another, push open the door of the back shop. The cat has retreated close to it and stands snarling, not at them, at something on the ground before the fire. There is a very little fire left in the grate, but there is a smoldering, suffocating vapor in the room and a dark, greasy coating on the walls and ceiling. The chairs and table, and the bottles are rarely absent. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.